Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Avodah Zarah is Tes Zayin. We are on Tes Vav Amud Beis, towards the bottom of the Amud, three lines from the bottom, four lines from the bottom. Tanur Rabban, the Gemara is going to quote a Brisa. We're talking about what we are allowed to sell to the Akum. The Mishnah that we saw already yesterday is talking about selling of livestock. There is there's an Issa, the Rabbanan, that one is not allowed to sell large livestock to a guy. It has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. It has to do with Shabbos. You sell the animal to a guy. Animal's used for working. You sell it to a guy, and what's going to end up happening is that you're going to end up renting it to him. You're going to end up lending it to him, and that will violate the Yisurim of Shisus Behemto because it's yours. It's fundamentally yours. It is yours, and therefore the animal will be working on Shabbos, and that you're not allowed to do. So it's Xera, so because we're worried about lending and renting, so therefore you're not allowed to sell as well. Also, there's the other consideration the Gemara had as well back on Tesvav and yesterday's daf, and that's Nisuni, and that is the test drive. You're going to want to test drive the animal, see if the animal works, see how good the animal can do labor. And that is going to be happening on late Friday afternoon, right before Shabbos. And then you might be in violation not only Shvitas Behemto, but you also be in violation of Mechamer, which is not only Nisar Daraisa, but it's Chayva Karban Chatos. It's one of the two, I mentioned this yesterday, one of the two Yisurim on Shabbos where you have the Karban Chatos, even though it's not one of the Lamites, Malachos. Yes, correct, absolutely correct. Okay. And with that stated, so we're talking about other things that you're not allowed to sell it to Goyim as well. And now we're talking about weapons. You can't be an arms dealer. An arms dealer is selling to Goyim, so that's going to be a problem. One problem, the Gemara doesn't say this, but kind of self-evident, Rashi does say this. One issue is, of course, is that you're going to be aiding and abetting, because what do you do with the weapons? You kill. And so that means that the guy is going to do Shvichas Damim when he gets the weapon, and that's one of the Zayim Mitzvos B'nei Noach. He's not allowed to kill. I mean, we're not allowed to kill. No, none of us are allowed to kill. So you'll be over on Lifnei Iver, as you're going to be now providing the tool in which he can kill. And also the other concern, the other issue, of course, is self-preservation. Right? You give them the weapons, and then they're going to take a turn around and just kill us with those weapons. That's, you know, it's not good. So one is not allowed to sell weapons to a guy. What if there is a Jew out there that you know is a murderer? In other words, that's just unfortunately he's got a rap. He's got a rep and a rap sheet that he's a murderer, so you're allowed to sell him weapons. So we said yesterday, no, you're not allowed to sell him weapons as well. Where the gray line is, where the borderline is on this discussion is, let's say you have a Jew who's not necessarily a murderer, but like, you know, he's a thief, he's a robber, and, you know, if push comes to shove, he'll kill, but he's not a killer. So the Gemara yesterday said, even though he's kind of on the border, but also don't sell him weapons as well. Okay, Tanur Rabbanan, with that in mind, now we are discussing about now being an arms dealer, not selling weapons of attack, of offense, but selling weapons of defense. Oh, Tanur Rabbanan. And Morchel Lam Trisim, V'yesh Omer Morchel Lam Trisim. So in the Brisa, there are two Brisas. One Brisa says that you are not allowed to sell them shields, and the second Brisa says that you are allowed to sell them shields. So my time, so the Gemara says, so what's behind this? Meaning, even before we go over the Gemara's reasons, meaning one can easily see a distinction between selling them an arrow and a sword, which is going to offensively kill somebody, versus a shield, which is there to just defend. And if it's just a defensive weapon, so ostensibly it should be fine. The Gemara goes on to explain. So my time. Elema, sorry. Lost my spot. Here we go. Ilema mishum de magnin alayhu ihachi afiluchit v'sari namilo. So the Gemara says, well, look, maybe we don't want them to. We don't want to sell them things that even are for the purpose of defense. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, afiluchit v'sari namilo. So then don't sell them wheat and don't sell them barley. Meaning, if we don't want to sell anything to them for preservation purposes, even for just preservation purposes, so they can preserve, so don't sell them food. So the Gemara, okay, I know the Gemara is going to come up a little bit rough right now, but the Gemara says, Amarav. E efshar hachinami. E over here, Rashi, not Rashi, but if you look at the side of the Gemara, the word E over here means im, right? We find this often, says the margin of the Gemara, whoever's responsible for writing that. But im efshar hachinami, the Gemara says, you know what? If it would be within the realm of possibility, then yes, I would say yes. But it's not within the realm of possibility. And why isn't it not in the realm of possibility? So Rashi over here writes below Ava. Because obviously there's always an Ava consideration, right? In other words, if we don't sell them some of the most basic commodities like wheat and barley, so that's obviously going to really strain the relationship. And I'm being nice when I say strain the relationship, right? It will be corrosive. So we obviously have to sell them wheat and barley. But in other words, but at least fundamentally, yeah, you can make such an argument. So the Gemara says, Ikadami Trisvin Hayim Time of the Law, Dichisham Zanayu Katli Begavayu. The Gemara says, you know what? We don't have to be so drastic, so dramatic, so drastic, where we're saying that we don't want to sell them shields because we don't want to be involved in anything in their preservation. The Gemara says, no, that's not the case. Meaning maybe the truth of the matter is that even on a fundamental level, we'll sell them food, we'll sell them weapons of defense. In theory, that's fine. The problem is, says the Gemara, this is the second suggestion of the Gemara, the problem is that they could take those weapons of defense and turn them into weapons of offense. The Gemara says, Dichi shalom zanayu kale begavayu. So when they run out of weapons, so what are they going to do? They got no weapons left. Okay, let's take our shields, and they'll start using the shields, flinging the shields as an offensive weapon. Okay, so that all is an explanation of the side of the Braisa that you're not allowed to sell shields. So far, if we could just organize the Gemara right now, there are two sides of the Braisa, or two versions of the Braisa. One says that you're not allowed to sell shields, the other one says that you are allowed to sell shields. In the position of you're not allowed to sell shields, there are two svaras the Gemara just gave. One is that it's because we don't want to be involved even in their self-preservation, which is, I know, that's a harsh answer, but that's one. Two, says the Gemara, is that sometimes they'll take the shield and they'll use it as offensive weapons when they run out of other things to fling at their enemy, so they're going to use their shields as well. And that's a second suggestion. Now we're going to go over the second version of the Braisa, which is that you're allowed to. And the Gemara over here gives a really simple explanation, and that is, when they run out of weapons, they're not going to take their shields and use them as offensive weapons, but they're going to run away. That's all. And so therefore the shields are fundamentally defensive in nature, and you can sell them things to defend themselves. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava bar Ravu, halacha ki yesharmim. And that, the Gemara says, this is in fact the halacha, that you're allowed to sell them weapons of defense, not weapons of offense. Amar Rav Adar Ba'ava, in morchem lahem ashashiel shor barzel. You're not allowed to sell them iron rods, or in other words, just thick metal rods. Barzel is copper? Iron? Iron. Okay. Thank you. So you're not allowed to sell them these iron rods. So my time is shem dechal sheminayu kli zayin. So the Gemara says, and I'll tell you why, because they're going to fashion them into weapons. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Well, are you kidding? In other words, so now you sell them a shovel. You know, they could take the shovel and they could just simply give it to the smith and have them turn it into a weapon. So Amrav Zvid beparzala hindua. And the Gemara says, no, we're talking about a specific metal, Indian iron. Okay, what do I know from this? But in other words, it's a special kind of metal, meaning it is made specifically for weaponry. And since it's made specifically for weaponry, so even though you didn't give it to them as a weapon, but because the metal is so good for weaponry, you know they're going to turn around and you know they're going to make a weapon out of it. That's the kind of metal that you're not allowed to sell to the Umas HaOlam. Ve'ayina dekam mezavninan. So the Gemara says, now we do. I mean, nowadays we do. Meaning, despite the fact that we just learned together a memra of Rav Adar Bar Ava that says that you're not allowed to, the Gemara itself, in its own time, in its own era, the Gemara acknowledges that it's something that's not followed, and we do in fact sell this kind of metal. So Amar Rav Ashi la parsai de magno ilavan. So Rav Ashi says, yeah, we're selling it to the Persians, and you know what the Persians are doing with it? They're forming weapons out of it, but you know what they're doing after that? They're defending us. So in other words, if I'm selling a weapon to a guy who's defending us, that's fine. That's perfectly legitimate. Tosus on the very top of the Amud points out that that's what we do as well. Venira, Tosus on the top of the Amud. Dana Nami Sharinan Hashalimkor Lov Dikochavim Klizayin Mehay Taima. In other words, Tosus says that we're arms dealers. Yeah. Who was to think I'd say that? But that's what Tosus says. We are arms dealers. We sell weapons to the armies. And our heter is, says Tosfos, because they're defending us with those weapons. Okay. Agalim v'sayachim. We're going back to the Mishnah now. We are back to the discussion of the sale of animals. So, calves, foals. So, Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Matir b'shvura mimnei she'ena yechol leitzrapos v'lachios. So, the Gemara here quotes the Braisa says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to sell a broken animal – because in yachol it's rapos of lachos. It can't. It's not going to recover. And remember, the entire issue of selling animals is that it's going to work, but if it's a broken animal, it's not going to recover. So the only thing that can be done with it is shechting it. And so therefore you could sell it to him. Amar lo v'ala marvina lo v'yoldos. V'kevin de marvina lo v'yoldos also l'shehuye. So they say to Rav Yehuda, what do you mean? It's good for mating. In other words, they'll let it linger around. They're not going to shecht it because they want to mate it. They want to breed it in order to produce the next generation. Amar lam l'chishetelet. And Rav Yehuda's response is, when that happens, I'll worry about it. Meaning it's a little bit sarcastic. He basically is saying is, it's not going to happen. In other words, a broken, an injured animal is not going to breed. And the Gemara says that according to Rav Yehuda, it can't breed. In other words, it can't receive a male animal. It's unable to breed, and therefore Rav Yehuda says really there's nothing to worry about. Meaning it's not going to work because it's shvura. It's not going to breed because it's physically impossible. Now again, what are the Chachamim saying, that they disagree with that reality? You know, generally speaking, we don't like to explain the Gemara that they're arguing about Metzius. But okay, anyway, Rav Yehuda's position is clearly that there's nothing to worry about. And finally, the last opinion that we saw in the Mishnah, Ben Besera Mati Besus. Ben Besera allows for the sale of a horse. Why? So we already explained back in the Mishnah, Rashi explained the Mishnah. I'm just reviewing the Rashi. Rashi writes that the horse is used for riding, for people riding on top of it. A person riding on top of a horse is not a Malacha D'Araisa. Not for you, not for the horse. Right? In other words, right now we're focusing on the animal. Right? The animal has to be shoves. The animal has to observe the Shabbos. So animal can't carry. You running on top of the horse is not considered carrying. Why? Because of the principle of chai no seis atzmo. Because when you are carrying another person, because he's helping you, he's distributing the weight, so therefore it's not considered the malacha of carrying, and as a result of that, it's not a malacha daraisa, and therefore it's okay. Here, Jack. Come sit here. So the Gemara says Ben Besera Mati Besus. So Ben Besera allows for the sale of the horse. Tanya Ben Besera Mati Besus. Ben Neshu Osa Ba Malacha Shein Chayavas Olav Chatas. So here the Brisa pretty much says it that you sell a horse and it's fine because the horse is not violating an Issa Daraisa. Rebbe also may base the Varim. Now Rebbe says it's also on account of two things. Number one, Echa Mishum Toras Kli Zayin. First of all, it's a weapon. We'll explain that better in just a moment. And also, you can work it. Now, it is a weapon because what the horse can do is the horse can be trained to kill somebody with its hoof. So, when the horse gets old, so you're not going to be riding the horse and you're not going to be taking it out to war, but the horse is still good for pushing the millstone, so it could be working on Shabbos. And once we get to working on Shabbos, so then we get back to the issue of Behemoth Gotham.
Why is it okay to allow Issa Durabanan?
Right. So remember, the entire sale of the animal is an Issa Durabanan. And the Issa Durabanan is because it's going to be violating an Issa Duraisa. So if the sale is if the Issa is only to begin with an Issa Durabanan, so it's Xera for Xera. I'm Rav Yochanan. We're right in the middle of the Zainamad Aleph, four lines before the wines start getting wide. I'm Rav Yochanan, Halacha Ken Ben Besera. The Gemara says that, in fact, is the halacha that you are allowed to sell a horse to a guy. Ibailu Shor Shel Petam Ahu. Now, the Gemara asked the question, what if it's a Shor Shel Petam? It's a really, really large, it's an obese ox. And can I sell that? Now, remember, the entire issue over here, the concern over here is that it's going to work. And if it's going to work, so then the sale will lead to lending, will lead to renting. But over here, it's Shor Shel Petam. It's fattened up. And really, it's not going to work. And really, the buyer is interested in one thing and one thing only, shechting and eating it. So is that going to be okay? Tibayla Rav Yehuda, Tibayla Rabbanan. The Gemara says, really, I can ask this question both according to Rav Yehuda and according to the Chachamim. Now remember, the Chachamim are absolute. You're not allowed to sell any animal to a guy, period. The Rabbi Yehuda is not as absolute. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're allowed to sell a broken animal to a guy. So the Gemara says that this fat ox can be a question both according to the Chachamim and according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara goes on to explain. Tibayla Rabbi Yehuda. Let's start with Rabbi Yehuda. Atkan lo kashar Rabbi Yehuda ala b'shvura. Rabbi Yehuda does allow the sale of a broken animal. But delo asil lechla malacha. But in other words, it's broken and we're talking about a serious break of the animal. And it's not going to recover, and it's not going to be able to work. But over here, we're talking about a fat ox. So I know it's very popular nowadays. Diet. Right? So the ox, you can put the ox on a diet, you can put it on a regimen, and you can bring it back and put it back and bring it back to shape. And so therefore it would be usur. And so therefore it would be prohibited, even according to Rav Yehuda.
The Gemara,
It could also, I suppose. But in other words, but the Gemara, the fundamental issue is malacha, and that's why the Gemara over here is addressing the malacha concern. And we could ask the question according to the Chachamim. Now remember, the Chachamim were more absolute. They said there is no sale of any animal to a guy, large animal. So the Gemara says that's true, but the Gemara says, yeah, the Chachamim are an absolute shita, but over here, look, the context is telling you that this animal is going to be shechted. The sale is for shechita. It's a shor shel petim. It was a fattened animal. So the buyer fattened it for shechting. The seller fattened it for shechting. The buyer bought it for the purpose of shechting. We all know, we all understand, the animal is going to be shechted, and maybe according to the Chachamim, it should be allowed. Tashma. The Gemara now quotes the following. It's a memra regarding the house of Rebbe. The house of Rebbe offered a fat ox on the Yom Eid, on the pagan festival. Now, in of itself, that statement can't mean exactly what we literally are just saying, because basically what we just read together is, yeah, Rebbe offered an animal on the pagan festival towards Avodah Zarah. That's not what happened. Rashi over here writes, Makrivin mas v'doron lamelech. That was a tax. Meaning that the king basically imposed a tax that everyone has got to give a certain donation in the form of an animal towards the Avodah Zarah. So basically what we're going to learn together now is that, look, it was the king's order, and I know it's going to be offered for Avodah Zarah. Perhaps you can ask the question about, you know, it's one of the Gimel Chamuros, so you shouldn't be giving it, but okay. Anyway, what Rebbe was basically going to do was he was going to bribe the government to change the law. And it wasn't going to be done all in one fell swoop. He did it in stages. I'm kind of giving away the Gemara's punchline, but that's fine. Meaning he did it in stages so that the law would be changed. So, first, the first $40,000 that he gave to the government, he gave to the king, was basically, look, don't offer the animal today, meaning on the pagan festival, offer the next day. The next payment that Rebbe gave to the government, another $40,000, was so that, you know what? Take my animal, but take it after it's shechted. What's the benefit of that? Because then, obviously, it's not going to be offered to the Avodah Zarah. Meaning the whole reason why they want the animals to offer it for the Avodah Zarah. But once I give it to them in an already shechted state, not going to be offered for Avodah Zarah. And then Chasud Al Rivavan, here comes now the third installment, the third, so to say, bribe of Rebbe, Shema Krivino so-called Iker. You know what? Let's do away with this entire tax. Here's another $40,000. So basically, Rebbe's a lobbyist, okay? And Rebbe now, with a little bit of greasing, so is able to change the government's viewpoint. So my time, Allah Mishum Dilma Asil Lishuye. So the Gemara says now, what's Rebbe's concern? Isn't Rebbe's concern is that, look, it's a fat ox, and it is for Shechita, but, in other words, maybe the reason why Rebbe wanted to change the entire legislation has to do with the fact that it could trim down, and it could diet and exercise and trim down, and it now will be a working, functional animal. Well, the Gemara says, no, that's not it. L'tamech shema krivin osu ayam alamachar, my time. Remember, one of the things that Rebbe did in terms of changing legislation is, he said, let's not offer it today, let's offer it tomorrow. So the Gemara says, and that makes a bit, I mean, it does make a difference. But in other words, was that really the objective? Of course that wasn't the objective. Ella Rebbe, Me'akar Milsabayi. Rebbe's real objective was to get to the third stage, which is to do away with it completely. And Me'akar Milsabayi. Vistavar, Ya'akar Vasi Porsa Porsa. And in terms of just the plan, in terms of how to get there, so slowly, in other words, so when you lobby, so it's not going to all happen at the same time. It's going to take stages and it's going to take steps. Rebbe knew that. Rebbe understood that. And that's what Rebbe was doing. So don't look at each step in of itself. That's not important.
Isn't there a concern with Kushat here? hearing? I mean, like the appearance, even the... I mean, how does somebody know what his next step is going to be when they see him doing something?
Right. You know, it's interesting you say that because the Gemara was, for a moment, the Gemara was actually learning from each individual step. Okay, but we have the hindsight, so for us it's a little bit easier to look at this and say, but yes, during the actual steps themselves, it's a little bit challenging. And what's going to happen? And again, that was the ultimate goal. And why do you want to get to that ultimate goal? Because again, it's a fat animal, and you could trim it down, and it's going to do malacha. And Am Rav Ashi Amalei Zvida. So Rav Ashi says, I was told by the following person Zvida, and Zvida Rashi says he was a professional fattener. Okay, he was a professional animal fattener. Bar Tur Mashina Leva Avid Al Train. You get an animal. And you get it to the gym and you bring it back to its lean state, not only is it going to be as it was originally, two times stronger. So you get an animal that's fat and then goes back to being lean again. So it's a right hope for all of us. We could become twice as good and twice as strong.
Rabbi, yes. How does this whole tradition start if it's really against the halacha?
No, what do you mean? The king instructs, meaning the king is demanding a tax. I mean, the king tells you to do it. It's what are you supposed to do?
So why does he say that?
I mean, Rashi says it.
Does he say that he was requested by the king to bring the
fat? That's what Rashi says. Mas v'doron lamelech. Rashi says it, and the Gemara doesn't say it, admittedly, but Rashi says it. Okay. Ein mochin lehem dubin v'arez v'chol davar sheish bo nezek l'rabim. Now, I'm sorry. Before I start with the Mishnah, let's first assess what we have so far. And just one short introduction. We so far now have been talking about the sale of livestock to a non-Jew, and we said that when it comes to large animals, so you are not allowed to sell large animals to a non-Jew because of Shabbos considerations. But when it comes to small animals, behem adaka, so it depends on what the minhag is. If the minhag is to sell, then yes. If the minhag is not to sell, then no. Where are there rooms for arguing? A behem shavur, if it's a broken large animal, so which is not good for working, can you sell that? Rav Yehuda says yes, the Chachamim say no. And if it's a horse, where the horse is used for riding, which is an issur d'rabbanan on Shabbos for the horse, so there we have a machlokus between the Chachamim and Ben Becerra. Chachamim say you can't sell it, and Ben Becerra says you are allowed to sell it, and the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan said the halach is like Ben Becerra. That's what we have so far. What we all know is that in terms of animals, we basically divide animals into two ways. Now, yesterday I mentioned the division of large versus small animals, which is a good division. There's another way to divide animals, and that is behema and chaya. Behema are what we would describe as domesticated animals. Animals that basically you bring onto the farm, you bring into the pen, and they sit there and they graze, and you know they're tame, calm animals. And then the chayos are the wild animals. Now, just because an animal is wild doesn't mean it's not kosher. In fact, many wild animals are kosher. The deer, the gazelle, and many other wild animals that are mentioned in the Torah are, in fact, kosher animals. So, what are some of the halachic differences between a behem and a chaya? So, before we get to the halachic differences, one basic difference is that a behem is eligible to be brought as a karban. A chaya is not eligible to be brought as a karban. So, your ox, your sheep, your goat, those are all behemas, they're offered as karbanos. The chayos are not brought as karbanos. What are some of the halachic differences between them? So, kisui adam. There's a mitzvah in the Torah of covering the blood when it comes to chayos, so you cover the blood. You cover the blood. When it comes to a behema, you do not cover the blood. There's no mitzvah of kisui adam. Another halachic difference between them is chaylev, the forbidden fats. In a behema, you're not allowed to eat the forbidden fats. A chaya, you're allowed to eat the forbidden fats. In fact, they're not forbidden. Okay, good. So let's, you know, got to change the terminology. Okay, so that is chaya and that is behema. Our question now that we're going to be dealing with basically is, are you allowed to sell a chaya to a guy? Now, even before we do the Mishnah, there are really now two issues to take into consideration. One is the Shabbos issue, which was what we've been discussing yesterday and today. Now, the Shabbos issue is that the animal is going to work on Shabbos. So you sell a lion. What kind of work is the lion going to do? Right, so it can, you know, it could perform in a circus, but like in other words, what work is a lion going to do? It's not going to do any work. The other issue, however, when selling a chai is that it's wild, which means it's dangerous. And are you allowed to sell things that are dangerous? That's another consideration. So there are really two considerations that we're going to be having as we're moving the discussion from now Behemoth to Chaya. In Chaya, could we also make a distinction between large and small? Maybe. Okay, well, that's something also to think about. The Mishnah begins, you can't sell to them bears and lions. Nothing that's going to be dangerous to the public. Ain bonim mimahim, and here's what you're also not allowed to do. You're not allowed to build the basilica. Gardum itstadja, ubima. Of these four items that we just mentioned, so two of them, we know just even by the word themselves, the basilica is a basilica. And itstadja, it should sound familiar, stadium. Okay, so those two things we know just from the words themselves. Gardum, bima are different types of structures. What exactly is a bima? So Rashi over here writes, I'm reading the Rashi, it's the last narrow line on the Amud, Namikain Migdal Katsarhu. So it's a shorter tower. The Gavoa Kidamra Ben Masechasota, Bima Shal Eitzos in Lo Bazara, Vanu Karnoso Alambra. Did I say it right? Maybe. Vayu Osin Oso Lidchof Misham Ish Lahamiso. And what is it used for? It's used for execution, says Rashi. Ovechol Eila Yesh Nezek L'Rabim. And Rashi says, look where this line of the Mishnah is. It's in the same Mishnah as bears and lions. You know why, says Rashi? Because it's basically the same fundamental issue. It's hazardous to the public. It's used to harm others. And that's why you can't build it. And now what's going to happen is that basically this bima is used for execution. So you're going to build the bima, and then they're going to start executing Jews off this bima, and that's why you're not allowed to do it. Rashi over here clearly writes that the prohibition of building a bima, and presumably these other edifices as well, the basilica, the itstadja, is because it's the nature of these buildings that it's there to harm others, just like a bear and just like a lion. If you look at the Rambam, right, the Marimachim for the Rambam is on the side in the Amishpat. If you look at the Rambam actually writes that these are buildings for Avodah Zarah, meaning the Rambam doesn't learn like Rashi. According to the Rambam, the issue over here is that you're not allowed to build structures of Avodah Zarah for them. Okay, back to the Mishnah. So, Ein bonim mimahem basilika gardum itstadja bima, ava bonim mimahem bimosios ubeis merchatzos. Now, a beis merchatz that we're familiar with, that's, of course, a bathhouse. That you're allowed to build with them. That's fine. What is the bimosios? So, again, I turn to Rashi, second wide line. Rashi writes, Garcin and binyan shein elitzer chavodes kochavim, omefarsh lakamem beperagrab yishmal v'koron lo alter, diktani bimoso sholov di kochavim mutarim, my bimos, bima shol evan, achas, umakr zvachim davi tashmish to tashmish lavodes kochavim. So you're allowed to build an altar. Now, I know I just read the Rashi, but I'll ask it as if I didn't read the Rashi. You're allowed to build an altar in which they're going to now offer their Avodah Zarah on? What? That sounds unreasonable. Rashi says, now I'll reread the Rashi. Rashi says, Tashmish de Tashmish la Avodah Kochavim. We are too far removed from the actual Avodah Zarah itself. It is first build the altar, then bring the carbon, then put it on the altar. So we're too far removed. So since we're at such an early stage of the Avodah Zarah, therefore it would be okay. Even as I say it, even as I read the Rashi, I know it's difficult. It's difficult to imagine that just because we are so far away, meaning all you need to do is just look ahead a little bit and you know.
There's
a little lift. Yeah, right. And you know, I mean, again, it's like lifting to lifting, so to say, which we said yesterday was okay. And, right, I know we did the Tosfos yesterday, but lifting to lifting is okay. And yeah. I know the Rashi sounds difficult. I realize that. I recognize that. If you want more on this topic, I'm not going to go through it right now. But look at Tosfos. Not Tosfos on this Amud, but Tosfos on the next Amud. Tosfos on the next Amud also has a little bit of difficulty with Rashi. Tosfos reads it a little bit differently. Anyway, it's the fourth Tosfos on the Amud base, the longer one. Anyway, back to the Mishnah. Now, as you're building these types of structures, meaning these basically neutral structures, bimos, which again, I know it's hard, but in other words, the altar or the beis merchatz, or you're building a shvitz for the guy, together with the guy. But higiel kippa, well, once you get to the kippa, basically is some sort of arch that is in front of the building. And what are they going to do when they get to the arch? They're going to hang some sort of avodah zara item on it. So basically, at that point in time, you have to bow out of the construction. Meaning, so you can be involved in building the bathhouse, but the portion of the bathhouse that they're actually going to fix avodah zara, that's where you have to bow out. Amar Avchanan bar Rav Chista v'Amri la Amar Avchanan bar Rava Amar Rav Chaya Gasa Arei Kebehem Adak LePirchos. A wild animal that's large is like a small animal as it relates to Pirchos. Okay, a word of introduction over here. The Gemara in Chulin talks about shechting of an animal, specifically shechting of an animal that's a Mesukenis. So first let's start off like this. You want to eat an animal, it's very simple. You take a knife and you shecht it. You give it a proper shechita. You have to know the first two prakim of chulin in order to know how to do a proper shechita. But you give it a proper shechita and then enjoy. And what about the animal being an avela? It's obviously not because you shechted it. What about it being a treifa? The assumption is that it's not a treifa. We have a chazaka that an animal is not a treifa. Yes, nowadays we check the lungs to make sure that the lungs aren't punctured. But we can generally assume that the animal is not a treifa. But what if the animal is mistukenis? Meaning that you see that the animal is on its way out. It's checking out. And so now I shecht the animal. How do I know that I shechted the animal before it died? Maybe I shechted the animal after it died. It's mistukenis. It's right now, it's either really elderly or it's really sick, whatever. It's teetering on death. And now I shecht it. So how do I know? So there is a test. That you don't actually, it's empirical. You just see the animal. There is a test to see whether or not the animal still had its vitality at the point of shechita. And what's that? And what are you looking for? You're looking for a jerking motion of one of its legs. Now, when it comes to a large animal, because the animal is so large, you only need one jerking motion, right? Either a contraction of the leg or an extension of the leg immediately post shechita. That will be proof positive that the animal had vitality up to the point of shechita, including shechita. When it comes to a small animal, because it's smaller and it's got a little more energy in it, so therefore you need two jerking motions. You need a contraction and an extension in order to prove that the animal had vitality at the point of shechita. That's the halacha. That's all as per the Gemara in Chulin. Good. Trefa is identifiable. The third parak of Chulin gives us exactly what renders an animal trefa. Old age is not a trefa. Even sickness is not a trefa. A trefa is a very specific puncture, wound to various organs of the animal. Right, correct. That's right. That's what's going to happen when it's a trefa. But just because the animal's old, that doesn't render the animal trefa. So that's all as per the Gemara in Chulin. What we're discussing over here in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, I know it seems like a funny place to discuss it, but is that are we looking at the same thing regarding a chaya? In other words, we want to shecht the chaya. Like I said earlier, you can eat a chaya. So you're going to shecht the chaya in order to eat it, but it's misukenis. It's checking out. And I shecht the chaya. And it's a large chaya. So do I need over here, so I need proof positive to know that the animal had vitality up to the point of shechita. And so I do need a jerking motion of one of its limbs. Do I need a single jerking motion like a behemoth, or because it's a chaya, because it's a wilder animal, so therefore I need two jerking motions? What the Gemara now is telling us is that it is the opinion of Rav, Chaya Gasa, and I'm going to read it again, second line after the Gemara, Chaya Gasa Areka Behemoth Daka Lepirkus. We're going to treat it like a behemoth daka, meaning I need two jerking motions of the limb. And I think, to the best of my understanding, I think I understand it, meaning the basic idea is that a chai is a wilder animal, it has more energy, and so therefore, in order to prove vitality, you need two jerking motions. But when it comes to the sale, we're not going to treat it like a small animal, we're going to treat it like a large animal, meaning you're not allowed to sell it. You're not allowed to sell a chai agasa, just like you're not allowed to sell a behemagasa. Ve'ani omer, but this is now either Rav Chanan bar Rav Chista talking or Rav Chanan bar Rava talking. Ani omer, but I say af lemechira makom shenagel limkor mochrim shelo limkor mochrim. No, I think that even as far as a sale is concerned, we're going to treat it like a behemah daka, which means minug. If the minug is that you sell, then you sell. And if the minug is that you don't sell, you don't sell. But it's not usur legamri to sell a chayagasa. Okay. Now, Tanan, Let's go back to our Mishnah, because what does our Mishnah tell us? You're not allowed to sell bears and lions or anything which is going to be harmful to the public. So time of the Yisbei Nezik L'Rabim, reading the Mishnah, the Diak and the Mishnah, it's pretty simple. The Mishnah is telling us that the reason why you're not allowed to sell is because it's hazardous to the public. Ha'leisman Nezik L'Rabim Shari, otherwise it'd be fine. So, and it sounds like the default is that you are allowed to sell these large, these wild animals.
What do the Jews have to do with these animals?
Okay. I don't know. I'm a Rabba Bar Ula Ba'ari Shavur Ve'ali B'Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe our Mishnah is not such a proof, because maybe our Mishnah, it's an Ukimta, but maybe our Mishnah is talking about where it's a broken lion, and a broken lion is, according to Rav Yehuda, just like you're allowed to sell a broken animal, you're allowed to sell a broken lion. Okay, so it's a dochik, it's a bit of a forced answer, but that's maybe what our Mishnah is talking about, and so don't bring our Mishnah as a proof. Rav Ashi Amar, Stam Ari Shavur Eitz HaMalacha. Rav Ashi's answer is slightly more fundamental, which is, a lion doesn't do any work. Meaning, what is a lion doing in terms of a malacha, in terms of a voda? Meaning, obviously, a lion is dangerous, it's ruthless, but in terms of, can I harness its power? No. I can't do anything with it. And therefore, since it's shavur, it's a malacha, since it's a useless, it's a fundamentally useless animal, so therefore, we're not worried about work altogether. And therefore, what? Now, here, follow me. Because, remember, when it comes to a broken animal, a machlokus in the Mishnah, whether you're allowed to sell or you're not allowed to sell. Tanakhama says you're not, and Rav Yehuda says you are. Here we're saying that a lion is fundamentally broken. Is this now working within the sheet of Rav Yehuda, or is this even the sheet of the Chachamim? Let's start with Rashi. Rashi writes, Aliba de Rav Yehuda, Deshar de Kavase Bebe Magasa, Vala Rabbanan Asr, Ula Rav Yehuda Nami Ari Shalem Asr, Vechaya Gasa, Kebehe Magasa Kerav. Rashi writes over here that only within Rabbi Yehuda are you allowed to sell a lion, because a lion is fundamentally useless. But according to the Chachamim, who have a more fundamental ban that you're not allowed to sell any large animal, even a broken large animal, so you're not allowed to sell a lion as well. That's Rashi's understanding. See Tosus over here. Tosus does not agree with Rashi. Tosus says that this is going even according to the Chachamim. See the top Tosus inside for more on that. Meisvei. We go back to the Gemara. Right, another. Right. Now, in other words, at least from the reason of malacha, that's not a concern. Then the reason of nezek l'rabim, that would be a concern. Meisvei. Okay, so the Bryce over here could not say it any clearer. The Bryce says that you're not allowed to sell large animals to a guy, you're not allowed to sell large chayas to a guy as well. And even though that you're allowed to sell small animals, where the minhag is that you sell small animals, but you do not sell large chayas. So the Gemara says, okay, the Bryce couldn't say it any clearer. And so this obviously is a refutation of Rav Chanan bar Rava. Ravina Rami Masis and Abraisa Mishana. Now we're going to do the same thing again, but basically the format over here is we're going to pit the Mishnah against the Abraisa and we're going to answer. Start with the Mishnah. Tanan. Ein Merchalem Dubin Vairaz Velo Kol Davash Yeshbo Nezek L'Rabim. So we start with the Mishnah. You're not allowed to sell these large animals because they're hazardous to the public. And the Gemara now makes a diuk. Time of Dias Bei Nezek, Halais Bei Nezek Mochrin. Only because it's hazardous to the public. Otherwise, you're allowed to sell. And then a reminu, and then we're now going to quote the Braisa Kishem Shem Mochrim Behem Agasa Kachem Mochrim Chai Agasa Vafil Bamachim Shem Mochrim Behem Adaka Chai Agasa Ein Mochrim. You're not allowed to sell a Chai Agasa. Period. Meaning no stipulation, right? No proviso. You're not allowed to sell a Chai Agasa. O Mishani Ba'ari Shavur Vali B'Drav Yehuda. So what are our answers going to be? Our answer is going to be one of two answers. Either one, the Ukimta, that the lion that we're talking about in the Mishnah is a broken lion, and just like Rav Yehuda allowed for the sale of a broken animal, he's going to also allow for the sale of a broken lion, or Rav Ashi Amar Stam Ari Shavur, it's a malacha. Or the more fundamental answer of Rav Ashi, which is, a lion is fundamentally useless. It's not an animal that you can work with, and so therefore, I'll say it like Rashi. According to Rav Yehuda, you're allowed to sell a lion. Had it not been for the hazard issue, you're allowed to sell a lion, because just like Just like a broken animal you'll have to sell a broken lion as well. Lions are by definition broken in that you can't work it. Rav Nachman just simply pokes a hole at one of the assumptions. We are assuming going into this whole discussion that a lion is a behema gasa. Maybe not, maybe a lion is a behema, a lion is a chaya gasa. It's a large chaya. The Gemara says maybe dama chaya dakahi. Maybe it's considered a small chaya. Now, Gemara doesn't even really respond to his challenge. It is difficult. I mean, I'm making an obvious statement. It's difficult to understand how we can even entertain the idea that a lion is a chaya daka. It's a small chaya. King, we're talking about the king of the jungle. Okay. Rav Ashi Daik Masnisan Mosif Tiyufta. Again, we're going to do this again. This is going to be round three of the same discussion. Rav Ashi is going to make a dig in the Mishnah, and then he's going to ask a question. Tanan. Again, we're just going to review the Mishnah. And again, we're going to make the same diuk as we've done already twice before. So if it's not hazardous to the public, you're allowed to sell. And we're talking about a lion, which is fundamentally a useless animal. It can't work it. But if it's another animal where I can work it, so then I wouldn't be allowed to sell to Yufta, to Rav Chanan bar Rava, to Yufta. And this is a refutation of Rav Chanan bar Rava, because Rav Chanan bar Rava said that the rabbinic ban of selling large livestock is only for behema, not for chaya. And now, after reading the Mishnah and making a diuk in the Mishnah, it sounds like you're not allowed to sell large chayas that could be used for work. Now, finally, the Gemara comes around and asks the question, how exactly are you able to harness the energy of a large chaya? Amar Abai, Amar Limar Yehuda, Demei Mar Yuchni, Tachni Rechaim Ba'arude. A wild donkey, you strap it up to a millstone, and you can harness its energy, and it can actually turn the millstone. Amar Avzera, Ki Avinabe Rav Yehuda, Amar Lan Gemir Minai HaMilsa, Demigav Rabashmi Ali, Velo Yadana. I heard something from a great man, and here's what I do not know. This is Rav Yehuda talking. Rav Zera says it in the name of Rav Yehuda, but this is Rav Yehuda talking. And I don't know if it's coming from either Rav or Shmuel. Now remember, Rav Yehuda had two Rebbeim in his lifetime. He first learned by He first learned by Rav. Rav was Nifter, and then he moved over to the Yeshiva of Shmuel. So his two Rebbeim were Rav and Shmuel, and sometimes, like here, he confused whether or not this was a Kabbalah that he got from Rav or from Shmuel. So first of all, what was the Kabbalah? What was the tradition that he had? Vis-a-vis, the proof positive that the animal had vitality. It's a large chaya. So do I need it to have two jerk movements right after Shechita in order to prove vitality, or is one jerk movement going to be enough? By a behema gasa, I only need one jerk movement. So, but by a chaya gasa, is that going to be the same or no? Because it's a chaya, because it's a stronger animal, so therefore, in order to prove vitality, I need two jerk movements. So I have it, says Rav Yehuda, as a tradition, from one of my Rebbeim, that it is going to require two jerk movements. Now, ki ase le kur kunya, ashkach te le revchia bar ravashi v'yasi v'kamer mishmei de Shmuel, and he heard the following in the name of Shmuel. Chaya gasa rekebe medak le pirkos. Okay, so he said over what we just learned in the name of Shmuel. Amen Ashmamin Amishmej Shmuel. So I said, oh, wonderful. So he got it as a Masorah from Shmuel. It Markiasala Surah Shekhila Rava Bar Yermia Dias Vikamali Mishmei the Rav Chaigasa Reika Behema Daka Lapirkus. So then he heard it in the name of Rav. So Amen Ashmamin Mishmei the Rav Mishmej Shmuel. And conclusion, they both said it. Both of his Rebbeim said it. Rav said it, Shmuel said it. I went over there, meaning to Eretz Yisrael, and I found Ravasi that was saying, so I heard him say it over in the name of Rav, that a chayagasa, a large wild animal, when it's a musukenis and you're shachting it, it requires two jerk movements. So he says, wait one second. The Gemara was meticulous in terms of making sure that you give proper attribution. You got to say it over in the name of who said it. And he left out Rabba Bar Yirmiya as being part of this particular Masorah. It offended him. Amalei Pasi Ochma. And so what does he do? He calls him a black kettle. Why does he call him a black kettle? All right. In other words, obviously he meant it as a criticism. Okay, so so Rashi over here gives a couple of explanations. If you take a look at the end of Rashi Pasu Ochma, he writes, very interesting, he writes, Darkan shel Tamid Chachamim shemitzarin al limud Torah. So it is the way of Tamid Chachamim where they're so engrossed in their Torah study, ein mechabsim bigdehem, and they don't wash their clothing enough, and so therefore their clothing is dirty. Now that's Pasi Uchma, according to this, is not a criticism, it's not an insult, it's a compliment. Okay. So Jack knows, and I was about to point that out, that the Gemara elsewhere says that if you have a Talmid Chacham and he walks out with a stain on his shirt, I hate saying over this halacha, I'm guilty of this sometimes, right. Okay, so but if you have a Talmid Chacham and he walks out with a stain on his shirt, so the Gemara says he's Chayv Misa. It's not becoming of a Talmid Chacham that he dresses in such a disheveled manner. So this Rashi over here and that Gemara over there, I know, are not in agreement with one another. Okay. Anyway, Minay Menach this time Shmaita. Back to the Gemara. So he says, look, you're right and I'm right. And let's put the two positions together and we're going to now fill in the Masorah. It Marnami, and the Gemara does this as well. Amar Zera, Amar Rasi, Amar Rava, Bar Yirmia. There it is. Rabba Bar Yirmia now. As part of the Masorah. Amar Rabba Bar Yirmia, Amar Rav, Chama Bar Gurya, Amar Rav. So now we got everyone in play. We have Rabba Bar Yirmia, we have Rav Chama Bar Gurya. So now it's all part of this Masorah, which is Chayagasa Areka Behemadakala Pirkus. When you're shechting a Chayagasa, and it's the Mesukenis, and I now need to know, was this animal alive during Shechita? So I'm looking now for the jerk movements of its limbs, and I need two jerk movements immediately after Shechita in order to indicate that the animal was not dead before Shechita. Okay, Atan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we are talking more about basilicas. We start with basilica talk tomorrow.